ॐ भगवताय प्रतिभूतिधाम भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं ज्ञानेन प्रतिधाम पुराणेन मन्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनी अम्ब त्वामनुसंसधामि भगवद्गीते भगवद्वैषिणी.
चतुर्विधा भजन्ते माम् चतुर्विधा भजन्ते माम् जना सुकृतनोर्जन जना सुकृतनोर्जन अर्थो जिज्ञासुरर्थार्थी अर्थो जिज्ञासुरर्थार्थी ज्ञानी च परतर्षभ ज्ञानी च परतर्षभ. चतुर्विधा भजन्ते माम् जनाः सुकृतिनः अर्जुन अर्थः जिज्ञासुः अर्थार्थी ज्ञानी च भरतर्षभ. So this is a famous verse, one of those, you know, if you're collecting the famous verses, this one, in fact, is the set of famous verses. So it says, in the previous verse, he's talking about the papakarmis, the ones who are not doing good actions, who are doing bad actions. If you remember from the fifth, to highlight this verse, well, I'll just review the previous verse. But those people who are dushkritinaha, people who have done, who do papas, you know, who do actions that cause pain, who do actions that cause sorrow, those people who are deluded, the lowest among men, naradhamaha, they don't take refuge in me. They don't seek me. Nekrapajyante, right? They don't seek me. They don't take refuge in me. I'm not, they're not devoted to me. That's the idea of this prapajyante. They don't seek me. They don't take refuge in me. Mayaya apahita jnanaha. Those people are, their knowledge, their viveka, their powers of discrimination have been robbed away, taken away by Maya. Okay? So they're overwhelmed by Maya. Their viveka has been robbed away by Maya. And they are asuram bhavam ashritaha. They are abiding in that state, mental state, bhavam, that state of being which is asuric, like the asuras. They're dull. They're abiding in the state of an asura. A person asura is somebody who is really bound by tamas. You know the sattva, rajas, and tamas? The asuras are bound by tamas. The world that they live in is tamas. And so I went through a little unfoldment last week about these sense objects are the physical body, right? The physical body and the world of sense perception, these sense objects, these are all tamas, right? The five elements that have gone through this, the tamas of each one of the five elements goes through this fivefold process of panchikarana to become this physical world and physical body. So those people whose realm of reality is in tamas means just the sensory world that I perceive, this physical body I perceive, these physical objects I perceive, this is my reality. Those people are the asuras. So the people, their whole, everything meaningful in their life has only to do with what they perceive with their sense organs. So that's how Shankara kind of deals with this. And so these people who are prone to papa, who are deluded, who are in a sense the lowest among the humans, they don't abide in any subtle realms, the lowest among the humans, Their viveka has been totally robbed away by this maya, and they abide simply in this world of tongues. So those people are not interested in me at all, because to be interested in me would be to have some sense of there being something more subtle than just this physical world that I'm dealing with. So they have no interest in me whatsoever. Now, for those who do seek me, who do take refuge in me, now he says, there are four different types, chatur vidha. Chatur means four. Vidha means variety. There's a variety of four. Four different kinds, janaha, of people. Chatur vidha, janaha. There are people, four different kinds of people who are sukritanaha, people who are do punya, who follow dharma, right? They do good actions. They do actions which accrue punya. Krit, you know, krit means to do. Somebody who's a sukrit is one who does good actions. So sukritanaha, a person who's doing good. Su means good. That dushkritanaha, du means bad. Dushkritanaha from above, the dushkritanaha, dush is bad, negative. Su is good. So dushkritanaha, sukritanaha. Those who do good, those who are gaining punya, those people seek me. They seek me, bhajanti. They worship me, right? In four different ways. There's four different types of people. Say it like this: there's four different types of people who worship me. Among the sukrits, those who are dharmanishtas, there are four different types of people who seek me, who worship me. Hey Arjuna. So then he says, here they are. The Arittaha, the Jignyasuhu, the Artarti, and the Jnani. The order is just for meter. But if we're going to, the order, the real order for this is Arittaha, first one, the Arittaha. The Arittaha is the person who's distressed. The person who's been overwhelmed by an event. Shankar uses the example. He says, like, the person who's been overwhelmed by something distressful. And then he gives some examples, such as thieves or tigers. And Swamiji, when Swamiji talks about in India, you know, there's a lot of forests, there's a lot of tigers. People are living out, you know, they're just in their little shacks. There's all kinds of wild animals. So you can imagine walking down a path and running into a tiger. It's very frightening, right? Or a wild elephant. Even in India now, when we're at the ashram, sometimes these wild elephants are there. Mm-hmm. So if you come into contact with a wild elephant, you have to get out of the way. They're very fast, and they'll move after you right away.
Yeah, it creates distress.
Yes.
Typhoon and chalisa.
Yeah, exactly. And so then he says also disease. Say you were to become ill or to get a disease. These are times when you're now being put into a dangerous situation, a life-threatening situation. So these times of great distress, at those times alone, because artha, a person who's an artha, it's at those times that a person who's can become devoted to me, can worship me, can call out to me, can think about me. It's at those times, the times of distress, that I come into their mind. And they call to me, they worship me, they beckon me, they ask for help. But that's the only time. At other times, they don't think about me at all. That's the artha. But at least they think about me. I'm important in that sense. I'm there for them. But they're just not concerned the other times. I don't come into their mind. So only at times of distress. That's the artha. The next one, there's four types, right? The next one is the artarti. The artarti is the one who desires wealth. Artha. Wealth can stand here. Wealth stands for a lot of things. It stands for security, power, pleasure. All of those things can come under the auspices of wealth, because with wealth I have access to all of these things. So it's really kama. The artha is kama. The kama is basically wealth, because wealth provides the artha and kama. You know, there's four purusharthas, right? Artha, kama, dharma, moksha. So wealth even allows for me to do dharma. for me to do rituals and whatnot to get a better next birth. So to improve my lot. So the Artarti is the one who will pray to me, beckon me, worship me when they need something, you know, when they need something to make things better for themselves in terms of their wealth or their fame or their power or their security. It's one up from the Artha. The Artarti will also beckon Bhagawan when there's distress. So the Artarti will also be an Artha, right? Both involved there. But the Artha is not necessarily an Artarti. The Artha only thinks of Bhagawan, you know, when things are really bad, you know? And oh, then, oh God, if you're there, please come now. Whereas it's not going to be, his presence is not going to be evoked just in the fulfilling of a desire. So Bhagawan's quite a few steps in the back, held quite a bit back in the psyche. The Artarti, much more. The Artarti, much more. Right? Because we're desiring things much more than we're in distress. So let me have this, and this would be good if I can have this. Oh, Bhagawan, please think of me here, and let me have that. So the Artarti is beckoning Bhagawan even more. So that's number two. These two, the Artaha and the Artarti, the one who's desiring karma or wealth, these two are within samsara. You know, just like if we were to take the four purusharthas, the Artha and the Artarti can cover the Artha, the Artha Kama and Dharma. Because it's all within the realm still of samsara, of fulfilling desires. You know, getting away from negative things and accruing positive things. But these two are devotees nevertheless, but they're within the realm of samsara. The next one is Jignyasu. Right? The Jignyasu is exactly what we know as over doors close.
Yeah.
Oh, that's why.
Oh, Chibi, we're sorry.
That's okay. Go with it. We'll get to it.
Come on, Scouts. There's a treat, please.
Okay. The Jignyasu is the one who wants to know the truth. The Jignyasu is exactly what we know. Just Jignyasu, the one who wants moksha, the one who wants liberation, the one who wants, and Ishwara Sehi, the one who wants to know me. Okay? So, as Shankar says, Jignyasu, Bhagavat Tattvam Nyatum Ichati. Yes. He who desires to know the truth of Bhagavan. Just the one who seeks liberation, the one who wants to know me, the Jignyasu. Okay? And the last one is the Jnani, the one who does know me. Okay? So he says, for the Jnani Vishnoho Tatravitcha. And the Jnani, the one who knows the truth of Vishnu. Vishnu is Krishna, it's the Lord, the one who's all pervasive. Right? So the one who, well, just say it's the one who knows the truth of Ishwara. Tatravit. Lord of the truth, Vishnoho of Vishnu of Ishwara. Okay? So these four, so of course Krishna starts out of the Sukrits, of the Sukritinaha, those who are dharmis, right? These dharmis, there are who worship me, these people, they are four different types. Okay? The Artha, the Artarti, the Jignyasu, and the Jnani. So let's look what he says now. Tesham jnani nitya yuktaha, tesham jnani nitya yuktaha, eka bhaktir visheshyate, eka bhaktir visheshyate, priyo hi jnani no charitam, priyo hi jnani no charitam, aham sacha mama priyaha, aham sacha mama priyaha. Tesham jnani nitya yuktaha eka bhaktihi visheshyate priyaha hi jnaninaha atyartam aham sacha mama priyaha. He says, Tesham, of them, of these four different types of devotees, the Jnani, Namrata singular, the Jnani, Nitya Yuktaha, the Jnani, who is a Nitya Yuktaha, one who is always connected with me, right? One who is always with me. Nitya means always. Yuktaha means always joined with me. Nitya Yuktaha. Eka Bhaktihi, and whose bhakti is single-pointed. His devotion is single-pointed. His, what he wants is one alone. Okay? The Eka Bhaktihi. All of the others, like the distress, there can be many different distresses, many different things to get away with, away from, and many different things to attain. Here there's only one thing, right? So the Jnani, his bhakti is single-pointed, it's only for one thing alone. He is always with me, always united with me. It is this one who, Vishishyate, it's the Jnani who stands out, right? The Jnani, it's the Jnani who is Vishishyate, is, I can differentiate him from all, I can just, he's distinguished from all of the others. He's Vishishyate. He stands out with distinction from all of the others. Okay? Now why? Priyaha aham jnaninaha asyaritam aham. He says, for the jnani, I am the most beloved. So jnaninaha, for the jnani, priyaha asyaritam, I am exceedingly, absolutely priyaha, dear. I am the most dear. I'm absolutely dear for the jnani. And he says, such a mama priyaha. And he is atyaritam, absolutely, exceedingly dear to me.
Mm.
Right? So now,
translated
a lot, rather poetical. Shankar has a really nice sentence here that makes sense of really what's being said. He says, Priyaha, Yasma aham atma jnaninaha, ataha tasya aham ajyarita priyaha. It goes like this. Because I am the self of the jnani, right? The jnani is the one who has self-knowledge, who recognizes, in fact, I am Ishwara. He'll say this later. He says, because I am the self of the jnani, right? Where he says, aham atma jnaninaha. I am the self of the jnani. Ataha, therefore, I am the most beloved for him. Because I am his very self. Right? And then he says, because in the world it is well known that the Atma is beloved, that the self is beloved. In the world this is well accepted, that the self is priyaha, is very dear. And the Jnani recognizes me as his very self. And then he says, Tasmat jnaninaha atmatva vasudevaha priyaha bhavati. And he says that because of being the self of the jnani, vasudevaha is beloved. So it says, therefore, because of being the very self of the jnani, Vasudeva, Ishwara, the Lord, becomes beloved. Then he says, such a jnani mama vasudevasya atma eva iti. Says, and that jnani, he says, that jnani is myself, Vasudeva speaking, the Lord speaking, and that jnani is myself. And therefore, the jnani is very beloved to me, because the Atma is beloved. The Atma is beloved. And so, for Ishwara, for Vasudeva, what is the most beloved? The Atma. The only thing that's beloved, in fact, is the Atma. What is beloved is Ananda, is fullness, is love. That's what is beloved. why something else becomes beloved is because we superimpose that love or that honor onto that object. Therefore, that's what makes the object beloved. And that's why we seek it, because we've superimposed the self on it, and then we go after it. But the source of the love, the source of what we seek, is only the Atma. And so the Jnani has recognized that the Atma itself is Vasudeva, is the Lord. Vasu means the one that pervades everything, that sustains and pervades everything. Deva means consciousness. It comes from div, to illumine, to be conscious. So Vasudeva, name for the Lord, it means the conscious being that pervades and sustains everything. That's Vasudeva. So the Jnani recognizes that Vasudeva is the Atma. And Vasudeva recognizes, right, that knows the Atma. The Jnani knows that I am the Atma. And so what the Jnani takes to be his own self, which is the Atma, is the most beloved to Vasudeva. You see what it is? So it's very beautiful. It says, for the Jnani, I am the very most beloved, you know, and also for me, the Jnani is the most beloved. Because for both, what is most beloved is the Atma. The Jnani recognizes I am the Atma, I am the self, which is the most beloved. And Vasudeva recognizes I am the self, which is the most beloved. So that self, which is most beloved, right, is now being recognized for both the Jnani and for Vasudeva. And so that which is most beloved is that recognized by the Jnani and by Vasudeva, and it is the truth of all of the others also. The only difference is that the others don't recognize. For the others, that ananda is superimposed on the object. And then the object, in fact, is worshipped as primary, and Vasudeva is called in to help. You know, but this is what's most important to me. Bhagavan, please come and save me. Let me have this. Okay? What's most important to me is getting out of this terrible situation. Bhagavan, please come. Help me. Right? So the ananda is projected, and that ananda is what I love. So this is the problem. The ananda is projected on innumerable things, maybe one at a time or maybe at the same time, but it's projected on innumerable different things, and those are the things that I seek, right? But there are many of them. For the Jnani, it's ekabhaktihi. There aren't many. There's only one. Because the superimposition isn't there. The only reason there are many things that I seek, many things that I'm devoted to, is because there's many things that I superimpose the ananda of the self on. That's why there are many. The Jnani doesn't do that. The Jnani doesn't superimpose the ananda on anything, so it's residing there as the self, which is only one. And so the Jnani is an ekabhaktaha. And what is the devotion toward? It's toward the Atma, which is the self of Vasudeva. Vasudeva is also not an Ajnani, and Vasudeva is not an Atma. The whole creation, if you say Vasudeva is the whole creation, that's an Atma. And that's Maya. Vasudeva is the Atma. The Atma which is limitless. The Atma that is not associated through Ajnanam with an Upadi. So that Vasudeva, both the Jnani and Vasudeva recognize to be the Atma which is Brahman. So then he goes on with this. Udara sarva evaiti aite udara sarva evaiti jnani tvasmai vamenatam jnani tvasmai vamenatam asita sahiyuttatma asita sahiyuttatma Mamevanitamangatim Udaraha Sarve Eva Ete Jnani Tu Atma Eva Mematam Astitaha Sahi Yukta Atma Man Eva Anitamangatim. He says, going on, praising the Jnani still. Udaraha sarve eva ete. Eva, indeed. Sarve ete, all of these. Take all four of these. Are noble, exalted. Udaraha. They're all noble. They're all praiseworthy. They're, all of them are exalted. All four. Because all four of them are my bhaktas. Right? So all of them are noble. But he says, jnani too, but the jnani atma eva is me alone. But the jnani is myself. Right? All four are noble, but the jnani is myself. Now Shankara takes this a little differently. He says, the other three, though the three are noble, are exalted, all right, but the jnani is myself. You can take it either way. So Swamiji does takes both ways. You can take all four of them are great. They're all noble people. They're all sukrits, right? They all are dharmis, right? And they all worship me. All four. But the jnani is me. So he says, Mamatam, this is my knowledge. Right? Then he says, this is my vision, this is my knowledge. And he says, Astitaha sahi yukta ma. Mam eva anutamam gatim. He says, that jnani is a yuktatma. He is always united to me. He's never separate from me. Yuktatma. That jnani, astitaha, is abiding. Astitaha is abiding in me. Abides in me. Mam eva, in me alone. Who is anutamam gatim. In me, who is a gati that cannot, a gati, a goal, something that you're seeking, which cannot be, which has nothing greater than that. Anuttama means there's, for which there is nothing greater. So that jnani reaches me, abides in me, is abiding as me continually, in me, who in that gati, that abode, for which there is nothing greater, that can't be, abode which can't be surpassed. Shankara says here, he says, he is that jnani has reached me, is abiding in me, in what form? When you use the word gati, you think of, like if I'm traveling somewhere, I reach a destination, that's the gati. And so here it says the gati that's being reached is a gati that cannot be surpassed. So now, how has the jnani, in what way has he reached this gati? So that's what Shankara is talking about. He says, that jnani says, has reached it in this way. Aham eva Bhagavan Vasudevaha na anyaha asmi. I am Bhagavan Vasudeva alone. There is no other. It goes like that. I am not anything other than Vasudeva, the Lord alone. So it in this manner, ityevam yuktatma samahita chittaha sanna, being one whose mind is abiding in that knowledge. That's what he means by the astitaha, abiding in. So one whose mind is abiding in that knowledge, which is basically, I am the whole, I am Ishwara, I am Vasudeva alone, I am not another. Okay. No, I want to make sure it wasn't. So I'm Vasudeva alone, I'm not another. And then he says, Mam eva Param Brahman, I am Param Brahman. So it means it's a if you can't get the regular phone, then it goes to the okay. So, Let's do the next one. Still working on this. Bahunam janmanamante. Bahunam janmanamante. Jnanavan mam prapajyate. Jnanavan mam prapajyate. Vasudeva sarvamiti. Vasudeva sarvamiti. Samahatma sudurlabha. Samahatma sudurlabha. Bahunam janmanam ante. Jnanavan mam prapajyate. Vasudevaha sarvam iti. Samahatma sudurlabha. He says, Bahunam janmanam ante. At the end of many lives, right? At the end, after many births, at the end of many births, Jnanavan, the one who has knowledge, mam prapadyante, gains me, attains me. In what form? Vasudevaha sarvam iti. Vasudevaha sarvam iti, meaning Vasudeva is sarvam, is everything. Vasudeva is all. There's nothing but Vasudeva iti. Saha, that Mahatma, and here Mahatma means the one whose Atma is great, means Brahman. That one whose Atma is limitless. So Mahatma can mean other things. Atma can, like if a saint is a Mahatma, that when you use that for a saint, usually means their Atma means their mind is Mahat. That means their mind is huge, is kind. Their heart is kind, they're big-hearted as a Mahatma. But here in this context, Mahatma means the one whose Atma is Mahat, limitless. Why? Because he has recognized Vasudeva Hasaravam. I have Vasudeva, the Lord is everything, is all. That Mahatma is sudurlabha, hard to come by. Hard to gain, very rare to find, sudurlabha. So now here he says, bahunam janmanam ante, at the end of many births. What they mean there, Swamiji and Shankara's commentary here, that antikarna shuddhi, that maturity that brings a person into that mamukshutvam, the viveka, vairagya, shamadama, all of these qualities that bring about antikarna shuddhi, these qualities are these samskaras are something that are accrued over lifetimes, you know, and until it's considered a huge punya that's been gathered. Remember the viveka chidamani, crores and crores of lifetimes of punya that gives one that adhikarikvam, that state of being a qualified student for this knowledge. And so it's over crores and crores of lifetimes one gains the antikarna shuddhi that will bring a person to this knowledge. And once that antikarna shuddhi, as a person has gained that, then that mumukshutvam and all of these things can arise that then can allow a person to become a jnani. Why this is important, why Shankara deals with it in the Bhasha and Swamiji deals with it, is because you can have the idea that, oh, now I gain knowledge, and now that I'm here, I'm gaining knowledge after crores and crores of lives, at the end of many lives from this point on, then I will, you know, become a jnani. But that's not what's meant. It's after many lives, one becomes, at the end of many lives, one becomes a jnani, one gains knowledge. Because of the antikarma shuddhi, and that jnani attains me. Okay? Then he says, and in what form attains? Vasudevaha sarvam. It is that Vasudeva is all. Swamiji brings up a point here for the understanding. This is, in a sense, a Mahavakya. Vasudeva is all. It's called padayam, you know, padayam asamanya adhikaranyam. And adhikarana is a locus, a location. Samanya means the same. Samana or samanya can be too. Means the same locus. Samanya adhikaranya. If I say, these are the stock examples, if I say in a sentence like, a lotus is blue, it is a blue lotus. Blue has the same, this word blue in a sentence, the lotus is blue. Lotus and blue have the same adhikarana. They have the same locus. One's an adjective. Blue is an adjective to the locus. So they're pointing to the same thing. There's the lotus and there's the blueness of the lotus. Another type of Samanya Adhikaranyam is, if I were to say Rama, this is another stock. Rama is a musician. Rama is a musician, and musician is Rama. They're both referring to the same locus, right? But now, and so they're in the same order of reality, right? Blue lotus and Rama is a musician, both same order of reality. But in Bhagayam Samanya Adhikaranyam, one is negated. This is the Satyam Mithya. Bhagayam means when one is negated. Like if I were to say, Vasudeva is Sarvam. Vasudeva is all. Right? Now what we mean by Sarvam is this whole Maya Upadhi. Right? It's the whole Upadhi. So if we say Vasudeva is this Upadhi, is this Maya Upadhi, is that what's being meant? Because we're to the same order of reality. Say no. Here we're talking about Vasudeva, the truth of Vasudeva. That's why Vasu means the one who pervades everything. Who is Deva from Div? Who is consciousness? The conscious being that pervades everything, right? Who pervades all of this, is all. And so here, in this one locus, in the one locus, there's going to be a negation of the one, right? Like in, now the example that one will be negated, the other will stand as real. Like for instance, if you say that stump is a person, that stump of a tree is a person. The person who like this, that person, the person is a stump of the tree. The person that you see is a tree stump. The person is a tree stump. Right? So that means you've mistaken a person, you've mistaken a tree stump for a person. That person is a tree stump. See? If I say that person is a tree stump, is the tree stump a person? You know what I mean? The person is the tree stump. But is the tree stump the person? There is no person there. The person has what? The person is mithya. Right? The person is in reality the tree stump. But the tree stump is not the person. In fact, there is no person. The person is mithya. See what I mean? And so here, one is negated, leaving the other behind. The mithya is negated, leaving behind the satyam. So bhagayam, when there is a negation, right? When one is negated, there is left only one locus. But when in this situation, there's one being negated. Let me say it like this. One thing is superimposed on another. And so to break that, you know, you see a satya-mithya relationship. The person is a tree stump. Right? But in saying the person is the tree stump, what happens to the person? The person is negated. That's the idea. So the person is a tree stump. Oh, it's a tree stump. Right? Person is a tree stump. Oh, it's a tree stump. You're not going to say the person is a tree stump. The tree stump is the person. Like Rama is the musician, the musician is Rama. Both are true. Both have the same order of reality. But if you say the person is a tree stump, then the person goes away, leaving only the tree stump. So Swamiji did an unfoldment on this. This is a term he would come up all the time in the teaching. If you say that Vasudeva is everything, right? What is left in that understanding of that is that there is only Vasudeva. Right? All of this is Vasudeva alone. What is left in the understanding is that there is only Vasudeva. And so the locus, it is only one locus, and that locus is only one thing, because the second thing is negated as mithya. See it? Okay. So there's a little unfoldment about that in here. Swamiji brings this out more than Shankara in his Bhasha. So he says, that person who realizes that Vasudeva is, so like that Vasudeva is everything, which means there's only Vasudeva. You're saying that Satyam Nitya is. Vasudeva has Sarvamiti. That Mahatma is Sudhurabaha. There are not many Mahatmas like that. There's not many Mahatmas. There's not many Mahatmas who mean those who recognize I am Brahman. Very difficult to find. Kamaish taish taira hrita jnanaha. Kamaish taish taira hrita jnanaha. Pratajyante tenya devataha. Pratajyante tenya devataha. Tantam niyamamastaya. Tantam niyamamastaya. Prakritya niyatasvaya. Prakritya niyatasvaya. Says kamaihi taihi taihi kritajnanaha prapajyante anyadevataha tam tam niyamam asdaya prakritya niyataha svaya. He says those whose viveka Pritajnanaha, those whose viveka has been robbed away by the variety of desires, kamaihi taihi taihi, by the variety of desires, by many different desires, the ones whose viveka jnana has been robbed away, prapajyante, they seek, they take refuge in anya deva, devataha, all of the different devatas, right? Different gods. One god like would be help me, like Lakshmi would help me to gain certain wealth. Saraswati would help me to gain skills in the arts. Ganesha would help me to remove certain obstacles. So like that, there's many devatas, and each devata will have a certain sphere of help. And because I want something particular from the universe, I will seek out different devatas. Who is the best devata to help me with this particular problem? So those who have lost their viveka because of by the strength of these various desires, they will seek, actually they're seeking Bhagavan in the form of these other devatas. And then tam tam niyamam ashtaya, worshipping them, taking to worshipping each one of them according to different niyamas, to different stipulations, or according to different rituals, then they are driven by their own prakriti, by their own nature. In other words, I want this thing and I need that thing and I want this thing for my ananda. And so I'm still a bhakta, but I will seek different devatas according to what are the things that I want in order to attain those things. Who are those people there? They're still bhaktas, they're still sukras. But they, because of desire, you know, when you're looking out into the world by the overwhelmed by their desires, right, they seek these devatas in order to help them fulfill their desires. They help them fulfill those desires. Okay. Okay, I'm gonna stop here. I'm kind of losing my voice and feeling odd. Let's stop here. Okay, I'll take it up next week. Om Purnamada Purnamada
Purnamasya Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.
The wise that see only Vasudeva,
yeah,
they also can pray to these different deities or
you can, but it's all mithya.
Yeah, but it's known as mithya.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do lots of things.
But I mean, they do.
Yeah, they do. It's mithya. You know, there's
to
nothing wrong in
make
that.
Make it flow better, or or is that not?
No, that's fine. There's nothing wrong in it. You just know what you're doing. Yeah.
Even Ishvara is
mithya,
isn't it?
Isn't yeah, but mithya, but here the Vasudeva Sarvam, you have to, when you say that, you say, I am the whole. For the Jnani, I am the whole.
Right.
Right? And I am Vasudeva, who is everything.
Right.
You have to understand that, you know.
And the Vasudeva, again, the translation is all-pervasive consciousness.
Yeah, and Swamiji does a nice thing on that, so if you have the handout, you can read it. But Vasu, right, means the one who sustains and pervades everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Deva means one who is self-luminous conscious. Right? Self-luminous,
so
light, consciousness.
Brahman,
it is. It is. Vasudeva is Brahman with the Maya party. Because as soon as you say the one who sustains and pervades everything, you're bringing Ishvara, bringing the Maya party. But being Deva, it's consciousness. The conscious being that sustains everything and pervades and sustains everything. So if you say aham Vasudeva, and if you say Vasudeva sarvam, Vasudeva is everything, then I'm included in that everything. Right? So you say I am the whole.
When you say I am the whole, you're really including the knowledge that's the Maya. I mean,
that's right. If you say I am the whole, there's nothing left out.
Right.
Yeah. The truth of the whole is Vasudeva, is Brahman. You can't even say I am the whole. You as a jiva can't say I am the whole unless the ahankar, the I, is identified as Brahman. Because if it's identified with any part of the jiva, which is not the whole.
So if you say I'm Brahman versus I'm Vasudeva, what would you kind of hold to?
If you say, if you say I'm Brahman,
uh-huh,
you're just putting the emphasis on just the set chit,
mm-hmm,
on consciousness. When you say I am Ishvara,
mm-hmm,
it's the same because Ishvara is only Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're doing is totally resolving the jiva into the Maya Upadhi,
mm-hmm,
right? And recognizing that this Maya Upadhi is nothing but Brahman. That's why to say, that's why to really show the Vedanta is to say I am Ishvara.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you say I am Ishvara,
mm-hmm,
this whole creation becomes mithya. You acknowledge the creation,
mm-hmm,
you know that acknowledge the jiva is only part of Ishvara, and the jiva is, then the Ishvara is only Brahman. Because otherwise there's no way for you to say I am Ishvara unless Ishvara has for its truth consciousness. And you are consciousness, the truth of Ishvara is consciousness, there's nothing outside of that consciousness, otherwise you can't say I'm Ishvara. You see that?
Yeah, it seems like these verses really emphasize more than and maybe I just haven't paid attention before and noticed it, but almost more than any other verses I've seen that I remember that the Ishvaratvam, you know, that because, I mean, it's really right there. It's not just saying you
because
are
from 7 to 12 is all Ishvara in the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm.
So now we are sitting in Ishwara, and we will be until this, through chapter 12. And it's, so it's wonderful in that way. The whole emphasis is on understanding the Ishwara. The last six, the whole emphasis is on understanding the identity. Even though all three are there in each three section, the Tvam Pada, Tet Pada, and identity, the Mahavakya. And, yeah.
But oftentimes the Tathpada is more like Brahman, it seems like, in a lot of texts. Whereas here it's really...
It's Ishwara.
Yeah.
In the last section, it's going to be more Brahman because identity.
Nice.
Not that the identity isn't happening in all three of them. Mm-hmm. It is. But one... What are you? You're getting to it through Ishwara here. There you're getting to it through Tvampada. Mm-hmm. Now you're getting to it really sitting within Ishwara. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be sitting in the Mahavakya.
And is there a particular upanishad that emphasizes Ishwara like this, these five chapters? Or is it?
I don't know. That just emphasizes Ishwara? I don't know, I think sections of them do, that this stand out for me.
For me?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Kena emphasizes more the Tvam Pada.
So what is the, in terms of the differentiation...
Think of it like that.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. I was just wondering, in terms of the differentiation, because that's what it's all about, right? It's like the Vasudeva principle now. It's like, what leverage do we get from Vasudeva suddenly? Like being...
It's just another name for Krishna or for Ishwara.
I see. It's just, so it's a synonym, really.
Yeah. But there's so many different names for Ishwara, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then you break each name down,
mm-hmm.
and then it'll highlight another aspect of a way of looking at Ishwara. Like that's why the Vishnu Sahasranama, 1,000 Names of Vishnu,
mm-hmm.
each one of those is in a sense a Mahavakya, an unfoldment of Ishwara. Mm-hmm. And so here at Vasudeva, is we're breaking it down now, because I'm breaking it down because Swamiji broke it down.
Okay.
And,
yeah.
Yeah, the one who sustains and pervades the entire creation, the devas, the consciousness aspect.
Carol, what about the term used here, very rare, sudur labaha?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Very difficult to find, very rare.
Very difficult to find. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rare. Difficult to find, difficult to... get, difficult to attain. Mm-hmm. Because see, to gain that nishta is, I mean, it takes that nishta takes place also in time. It means that you're growing in terms of your vairagya. That's when all of the unconscious, all of the different parts of the mind are maturing in the light of your knowledge. And so they become ekabhakti means that the whole being, all of you, your devotion is toward Bhagavan, toward Vasudeva, toward Brahman, which means what? That you're not projecting the on and the out onto the world. That's all it means.
So
right, the mind is mature. It no longer has that ajnanam where it's projecting its on and out in the world and then becoming a devotee to that object. You become a devotee to whatever object you project the on and onto. Your devotee is that object. And then the thing is that then your devotion goes on changing.
That's a very constant devotee.
Yeah, you're not a constant devotee because another object comes along, another thing, object of desire, but whatever that object of desire is where your attention is.
So whenever
is
that
you see,
whenever
you
that
want.
Takes place, then it's always that all these parts are it's seeking well-being and wholeness.
That's right.
Every time.
They're always after yourself.
And they come in varieties of forms. And
whatever you desire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that, as long as you have an upadhi, in fact, that is going to go on because of the power of the karma, but it becomes mitya. There's no one inside. Your mind isn't devoted to that behavior. because you're sitting with yourself, and your mind is matured so as not to get pulled away.
So even when they pop up, feeling I want to be complete in this sphere.
The nityatva comes up right along with the...
With it, yeah.
What is the effect of that? It
doesn't have a hold on you. That's the effect of it.
So that's kind of like the...
And you can pursue it or not pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can enjoy it. But you're free for it. It can go also. That's the helium balloons. That's a good example for
so
it.
So you shouldn't expect all of that just to be erased and swiped away. I mean, it's...
It'll never be erased and swiped away as long as you have a new body, but the helium balloon reality of it is what grows. In other words, you can enjoy it,
mm-hmm.
and you can also let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the thing, that freedom to enjoy these little sukhas that come along, you know, without getting, you know.
But it's kind of disturbing, you know. I feel like the more I understand what we're talking about here, the more it gets disturbing when I see myself hanging onto this balloon, you know. It gets like, you're weird, man. You know, if somebody witnesses how weird that is to hang on to that, you know, it becomes kind of odd.
But you know what? That's such a good to catch yourself. That is the sadhana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you catch yourself hanging on and suffering,
mm-hmm.
you know, and becoming contorted over these things,
mm-hmm.
but then you have this knowledge to bring to it,
mm-hmm.
and some compassion also. To the child part or the immature part that's hanging on in that way, and so much is at stake and all of that, mm-hmm. you know, to be able to kind of bring your knowledge and kindness to that part, and that's what lets it let go. You know, I love the example of the monkey on the porch that comes and puts its hands in that big pot full of nuts that has a little tiny hole, you know, the monkey gets its hand in there and can't get its hand out of the jar unless it lets go of those nuts.
Mm-hmm.
And man, it won't let go of the nuts.
No.
Even when it's...
I'm not going to let go.
Even when it's being beaten, you know, it will not let go until it's almost dead, and then it lets go and scampers off.
You know,
that's
saying,
desire. That's how powerful it is.
Even saying that I won't let go, you know it's mithya, but at the same time you say, and I'm not going to let go, that's mithya as well. I mean, where do you make that transition?
Well,
there?
The thing is, you can say that it is mithya, but for the part of you that won't let go, it hasn't become mithya.
Right.
Or, in fact, it can become mithya, and mm-hmm. you know it's mithya, but the part, both the mithya part is not going to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And so at some point, it has to seep through, and you have to recognize it's not worth it. I noticed in my own, I mean, we're all maturing at our own rate, but I noticed for me it's a lot of giving things up because it isn't worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth my ananda. It's not worth taking away my shanti. The shanti becomes more and more valuable, and these things don't compare. The world doesn't compare to the peace. And that becomes more and more real to you. And so you don't want the disturbance that hanging on.
Would you tell yourself that, or how does that grow?
I think it goes in stages. At first you recognize it, and then you tell yourself that, and then you talk to yourself about it, you know. But then there comes a time when you kind of know it's not worth it, and so as the problem comes, you let it go. It's the same with knowledge, with clarity. Like, first you have a doubt about something, this doubt comes, and then you go and you don't know how to resolve that, and you ask the teacher, you study, you think about it, all of that, you know, and then you finally resolve it. There comes another time when then what will happen is that same doubt maybe will come, but as it comes, then you see clearly what it is, and it goes. And then there comes a time when as it comes, you see, and it goes. And then there comes a time when that doubt doesn't come anymore at all, because the knowledge is there, has replaced it. But if you have not once, you have a doubt, once that, when the doubt is replaced by knowledge, that doubt doesn't come.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes through its own process of coming, creating, you know, problems and needing to be resolved, to come in, and then the resolution comes. Then it comes together with the resolution, then it doesn't come anymore because of clarity. Right? And I think it's the same way in terms of Vairagya. Your ananda is no longer being projected, less and less being projected on to the world. And so the mind is enjoying the shanti of not going out. It enjoys shanti because it doesn't go out and ask the world for that. And so whenever it does, it disturbs the shanti. And so then you don't want that disturbance, and so you go out less and less and less. Going out less and less and less, and you're accepting and dealing with what is, but not asking what is to make you happy. So that's a maturing process, and you just watch it, watch yourself mature in that way. You know, we're all aware of our maturity and our maturing process and our immaturity. We're aware of our antakarana shuddhi and our lack of it, both. You know, you can be, you know, as your mind settles down more, you'd be happy because, oh, my mind is settling down here. That and how nice that is. Or my mind is acting up. Oh, my God, there it is again. We know what's going on.
Do you think you could have a yana and at the same time have that this pattern throughout your whole lifetime? I mean, do you have to measure your life by saying that now I have firmness in the knowledge, or can this just continue even till you die, but with knowledge that it's not true?
It can, like, say for instance, everybody brings their own baggage with them, right? Say you're, like I was joking last week, say you gain knowledge and you're in your 60s,
yeah.
Right? You're in your 60s and, you know, you've got 5 years left.
The countdown.
And then you say, I got this knowledge way too late in life. Right?
Join the club.
I got this knowledge too late in life. Woe is me. But then we talk, remember I was saying, then we talk about the person who meets their teacher when they're 20, you know? But now everybody's saying, oh, that person, so lucky they met their guru and everything when they're only 20, and here I am in my 60s. That person is so fortunate. But then that person could say, yeah, but last time I didn't get that knowledge until I was 60, and I had to, you know, see what I mean? I mean, it's just how it is. You get this knowledge at some point and your mind still has to go through, depending upon your vairagya and different qualities.
So are you saying that if somebody doesn't have nishtha, yama-nishtha, then they have to be reborn? Sounds like what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, what do we mean by jnana-nishtha? Like, say you get this knowledge, you know, and you're 60 and there's still in your mind some things that really you want to do. Right? You really want to do. Now say you're 60 and your mind still has some problems, but they're all mitya, and it's, you know, mm-hmm. That's not a problem. But your mind hasn't resolved all of those problems, but they're not a problem for you. That's different than saying having still things to be done. There's things to be done.
So even if the mind isn't totally mature, that won't affect your identification with Brahman.
Well, I would say like this.
Yeah.
Once you recognize yourself, yourself isn't changing no matter what your mind is doing.
Hmm.
You know? But the problem that people suffer from is that the strength of one's needs and desires are so strong that differentiation, your mind gets swept away by the desires. Exactly what, you know, that verse is saying. Your mind just gets swept away by your desires. And so there's no even recognition of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so then, if there's enough recognition of yourself, enough teaching, then you go and you pull your mind back. But you can also get kind of lost in your desire. So it just depends on...
Yeah, it's almost like a blackout, but even if you have a blackout...
Well, if you have a blackout, the lights will come back on. Swamiji even talked about that.
But it's kind of painful. It's like falling... Wanting to sleep behind the steering wheel, and then
waking,
and then rolling through the desert with your car or something—it's kind of disappointing.
Falling out of the airplane, embarrassing. You go on forever. Anyway. No.
You know what is really amazing is that we all have these literally thousands of moments every day, realizing that all to more and more, where we distinctly make choices, you know, about how we relate to things, you know, to people, to incidences, to anything like what you were saying, you know, that it's this just perpetuated desire machine that comes through these senses. And then how do we, this process of coming into what I call right relationship with this whole desirous nature of mm-hmm. ourself, to then overcome the need to having to respond to that, you know? That's just phenomenal. Because it's not like, you know, I mean, there's so many moments, I'm realizing that there's like every moment, it's like, how do you respond to this person, to this email even, like very pragmatic things, simple things. You know, how do I want to line up with this person right now? How do I want to respond to this phone call, or this marketing person selling me some crap, this computer technician just hanging up on me for the fourth time? Like, you know, all these kind of weird things that we're experiencing. And then how can I stay kind of in the center with all that? It's just really phenomenal. It's really, it seems like phenomenal to stay in that place that we're talking about.
Well, I think the idea of having to stay in the place goes away. Because whatever your mind is doing, you're still there. So you don't have to worry about staying.
Right, yeah, I remember you saying that.
That's the thing.
Right. It's the same
thing. That's the Satya Mitya. It doesn't matter how weird the thought is or what inner weird interaction that's going on, you're still there exactly the same. That's the nishtha, really.
But only when you recognize it.
Well, yeah, you recognize it.
But you might get completely consumed in this annoying...
Well, that's when you have to bring your mind back.
Right.
But there comes a time when you don't have to bring it back. No matter how weird the thing is,
it will stay there all the time.
Yeah, because you all are there all the time.
So you don't get annoyed. I mean, then you wouldn't get annoyed, really, practically. Because then there's no reason. Who are you getting annoyed about? What are you getting annoyed about? I mean, it's like, makes no sense getting annoyed at that point, right?
Yeah, more or less, right? But see, there comes a stage where you don't lose your self-recognition even when your mind isn't living up to your knowledge.
Okay.
And you shouldn't feel a sense of self-defeat when that's taking place. I mean,
no, you shouldn't.
That's not...
Because that's another kind of punishing...
Yeah.
That's another punishing...
But how do you how do you take care of that if you like...
By learning how to be the inner friend.
Mm-hmm.
But so one thing I kind of notice is sometimes, like, I'm in the computer watching you this and that, whatever. You know, there'd be this, like, quiet moment where like, self kind of becomes more evident, you know, and that's so nice, you know, and then, but then, and this is what I'm wondering about is like, why do I almost run from that and go back to the computer, is it, or back to the television, or like, why am I doing that when the other thing is so much nicer? And that, but then it's like, well, I don't want to beat myself up about it. I mean, maybe I should just say, well, sometimes those moments come and it's just like, you know. And but there was almost like a thing to go back to the busy stuff. I don't know if that's just habit or what.
Or karma.
It could be anything.
I think the thing is because otherwise you're trying to hang on to a state of experience so that the thing to look for is to recognize yourself in that moment and then enjoy the continuing recognition of that, even when you're watching TV or going back to the computer. Because what we want is to just recognize ourselves, period.
Yeah.
And don't have to worry about staying with it or not staying with it. If you have to worry about staying with it, then there's something boring about that also.
But that's kind of, it does sort of seem like that. Yeah. Like it's boring.
It's boring. Yeah, because then you have to freeze everything and say, well, okay, let me hold this and let me just stay here. That's not what it's about. It's recognizing that I am here, no matter what.
It's also judgmental.
Well, doesn't Ishvara kind of play in that too? I mean, the total karmas that makes the whole operation.
Yeah, but the thing is, are you recognizing yourself as Ishvara or the constant without having to work for it? So every time, say, your mind becomes quiet, that's why you're getting an experience like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, oh, beautiful, quiet mind, thank you. And then move on.
Right.
You don't have to hang on to that.
Right.
What you want is just a continual recognition of your presence, no matter what the mind is doing, or how quiet it is, or how active it is. Right. Otherwise, you're saying, okay, let me hold on to this state. It is, really. Because otherwise, what you want is to recognize your presence in any state.
Right.
Quiet mind, TV mind, computer,
so there's no problem having this busy.
No, because it's natural for the mind to be changing. What happens though is that this change in mind that does change moment to moment to moment can be relaxed instead of anxious. When it's relaxed, that's the shanti, and so it can be very, very engaged in all kinds of things, but that kind of the depth of your own presence is not being competed with by the agitations in the mind. But even if the mind is agitated, you're still there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just another one of the experiences. It's another one of Ishvara's experiences. That also keeps giving up continually over to the whole, to Ishvara, all of it. So, you know.
Yeah. So again, to wish that not to be there is not quite.
Well, that creates another tension.
Yeah.
So instead of wishing it not to be there, it's better to recognize your own presence in it.
And say that's Ishvara, or that this is
to recognize. Yeah, but you can say that, but you could just recognize it as Ishvara, or recognize your own self in the middle of that experience. And the more you do that, in fact, what becomes the constant is your own self, the changeless self that's there, untouched by all of the experience, good and bad. So just use the quiet experience versus the getting pulled back to the computer experience. See the self that's not pulled anywhere. And that's the truth, that's the moksha, because otherwise we're again.
It's also the inner friend, like, I'm starting to get that too, how relevant that is, really, you know. It's so easy to kind of beat down on yourself, you know, in all kinds of a million different ways. You know, is there anything besides your meditations that could help with cultivating that inner friend to kind of, because I remember in your meditations often that's where you bring that in, right?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
But you bring it in throughout the day, throughout your life, it becomes a constant. That's the basic MO of the mind, of the buddhi, is to be a swami to the rest of you. Be swamiji to the rest of you. To the rest of the planet.
You know, and you have to learn to be friendly. I mean,
you have to practice it, especially if you're used to being negative, then suddenly the swami has to come in to that part too. Like Swamiji doesn't become mean to the negative. Say a person is negative and hurtful and all of this, Swamiji will try to be helpful to that negative person, not mean. So that kindness has to go to all the different parts, that concern or that wanting to help. The inner friend is the one who wants to help, you know, not criticize or hate or you know, put you down, but wants to help you to grow.
Or even to measure somebody or measure yourself, you know, on this continuum, you know.
That's another painful problem.
Yeah.
I'm not as good as so-and-so. But then you have that. I'm not as good as this person. Then you have, I'm better than that one. Once you put yourself on that continuum, you know, you also become a terror to other people. You know, because judgment goes both ways.
Yeah. That's good. I love this detail.
Let's call it a night.
Yeah.